New Galaxy Broadcasting proudly presents Integrative Hermetic Health with Hugo Rodier, MD. In this program, we explore a powerful new paradigm for health from the standpoint of integrative medicine. In his practice, Dr. Rodier integrates the ancient Hermetic art and the enduring role of food as medicine with modern nutrition, but also allowing for the wide range of important health practices, including truly valuable medical discoveries, chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathic and herbal medicine. In this program, Hugo Rodier, an expert in intestinal health and nutrition, will help the audience discover an approach that focuses on actual cures, not the masking of the elegant simplicity of many health solutions for the sake of profit. Profit too long has been an overriding motive of the pharmaceutical companies, and sometimes, sadly, by many in the medical establishment today. This is Johnny Bluestar. I'm happy again to assist Dr. Hugo Rodier, a physician with an integrative medical perspective, your host for his program, The Integrative Hermetic Health Show. Today, we will be discussing two important topics. The first is a rather remarkable article from the Journal of the American Medical Association, which gives a bit more credence to our continuing discussion of the dangerous deficiency of most physicians when it comes to understanding the importance of nutrition in maintaining, correcting, and enhancing human health. Then we're going to follow with a discussion of a special CBS report based on a study published in the Abnormal Psychology Journal on the effects of social media on teenagers' mental health. Good morning, Dr. Rodier.
Good morning, Johnny. Thanks for all you do.
Well, I appreciate that, and thank you for giving me a continuing enlightenment experience about human health, and also sort of the psychology and the metaphysical aspects of that, which are, I think, extremely important to our spiritual and psychological nature. I feel like I grow every time I do this program. Anyway, today we're looking at an article in the Journal, as I said, of the American Medical Association. This is called Nutrition Education in Medical School, Residency Training and Practice by a Dr. DeVries, who's the executive director of the nonprofit Gables Institute, which creates nutritional courses for medical students. This particular article confirms your observation that there leaves a great deal missing in both medical school and specialist training in nutrition. The other author, Dr. Willett, has done research for the National Institute of Health and the Breast Cancer Research Foundation, is an author of various books on nutrition and epidemiology, and has received recognition for his teaching in the Culinary Institute of America. So these people appreciate, or he does anyway, the role of a good chef in somebody getting to understand nutrition for themselves. Perhaps you could explain, Doctor, the dietary interventions that have been researched so thoroughly and the guidelines of the 2018 American Heart Association College of Cardiology, which mentioned the lifestyle therapies for treating arteriosclerosis disease, which is addressed to clinician who probably don't have a clue as to what to do because of their absence of training.
Well, sure. In answer to your immediate question, I should say that the American College of Cardiology famously, about 20 years ago, came up with TLC as the main way to treat heart patients, but it just didn't stick. Now, by TLC, people are thinking tender loving care, that is true. But what they had in mind is therapeutic lifestyle changes first.
Ah.
And it just got forgotten. And we see attempts like this to enlighten people, patients and doctors, from time to time. I'm hoping that this last salvo from Willard DeVries and Bono, these docs writing in the JAMA, will take more traction and will grow better roots and start a revolution that in many sectors of our economy, the healthcare system, it's already flourishing. Like in my practice, I have to say that these men have been my mentors, my guides since I graduated from medical school. So I have a lot of respect for them. I've read their articles. Willett's book, Eat, Drink, and Be Healthy, was a landmark book for me in my youth. Oh. And of course, you know, I've tried to join them in writing myself. I'd say my writing is more interpreting what they put out as researchers. I'm not a researcher. I like to be more of a practitioner, if you will. And we need both, right?
So, definitely.
Right. So this article just came out this week. I'm hoping it's the shot that starts yet another revolution. We're living in the golden age of nutrition. Nutrition research, it's just so strong. And it just, there's no way that doctors and patients can ignore this anymore. And so hence this article, which you read it, you see that it's appealing not only to patients, but to doctors, and how doctors are clamoring for a better nutritional education starting in medical school. In the 80s, I had none, zero, nada.
Really?
Nothing.
Well, we'll see shortly in this article how much more advanced they are.
Not much.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I wanted to ask you, there's some points here in the article that are mentioned, and I think they're rather startling. I'd like you to comment on them one by one, if you would. Could I?
I would, but before that, yeah. Let me start on a hermetic point that you alluded to at the introduction. Okay, and then I think we'll be in a better position to dissect this article in a more material, earthy way.
Okay, but, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, because, you know, this article itself suffers from a lack of integration, if you will, but let me give it a shot. I believe that one of the most dramatic problems in our society is that we are detached from Mother Nature. We have forgotten what the ancients knew very well, and we've had pockets of resistance, or I should say pockets of enlightened people who have maintain the tradition of being attached to Mother Earth. Another way of putting it, our thinking is very male, very materialistic, mm-hmm. very rational. And there's nothing wrong with that. Just that it needs to be balanced with the female, with Mother Nature, with the environment, with an understanding of how we fit in this world and with the environment and other people. And these are very basic tenets of integrative health that you yourself alluded to at the beginning, as I mentioned. So basically, why in the world would you not understand that our bodies, everything about us, are transmutations of Mother Earth? Our bodies are what Mother Nature gives us. The food we eat is who we become. In other words, every atom of our body came from Mother Nature, and they all go back to Mother Nature in the cycle of life and death as it should be. And so when we're detached from that understanding, we not only pollute our environment, we not only pollute our food sources, but we have a tremendous hole in our education and in the way we treat people, because we don't get the basic understanding that nutrition is what makes us, and further, nutrition is how we fuel and give energy to our body. And so when health breaks down, why would you not think of nutrition first and foremost? I mean, a child can understand what I'm saying. And why is it that a system of healthcare has ignored this for decades? And in fact, we have a disease care system, not a healthcare system. And so that is the most basic and glaring problem in our society that leads to nutrition. In my time, it was quackery. Now it's an alternative. Soon it will be the way to practice medicine.
Amen. Well, I would say another thing is that when we talk about being aligned with nature, one of the things that we're also given is our consciousness. And I believe that our consciousness has kind of fallen from its proper place, because then if it weren't, we'd have the kind of intuition and alignment with nature that we should.
Exactly. So, and our fellow men.
Yes.
I just got done reading Meditations from Marcus Aurelius. As you know, he was the last of the five good Roman emperors in the middle of the second century.
Yeah, very interesting work.
Yeah, and I was surprised that he had such a profound understanding of the perennial philosophy, which we've had since forever and from which all philosophies and religions sprang. Perennial philosophy being that we, the whole world, the whole universe is one gigantic consciousness, and there is no separation between the material, the spiritual, between one person to another, between one person and the environment, between one person and that rock upon which you're sitting. And so Marcus Aurelius understood this too. I did not realize that Romans had that profound understanding as well. And of course, like I said, you know, I shouldn't have been surprised, because there are pockets of resistance, if you will, or enlightenment in every society, in every age, people who have understood the perennial philosophy. And that's what we're talking about, hermetic health.
Well, yeah, during the Roman Empire, there was a great deal of prevalence of the Mithraic mystery teachings, which we don't have much information about. It's mostly it's mostly in pictures and sort of symbolism. And there's symbolism in these vaults.
There's
very little written about it. And it seems to be related to the Eleusinian mysteries. It's maybe related to some of the Zoroastrian teachings too, where its name comes from. But at any rate,
before you move on, let me just say that as a Mason, I'd like to think that Masonry has carried those mysteries in its bag of tricks, but I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I'd like to just take it a little further, because I certainly agree with you. And Masonry, unfortunately, is all over the place on the internet in an extremely distorted way.
Absolutely.
It's partially laughable, and it's partially really dangerous, because somewhere in this mishmash of all kinds of claims, there have been organizations that have co-opted some of the teachings from Masonry and inverted them.
Well said.
Well, anyway, we're going to take a break now, and we'll come back and we'll discuss some of the more earthy details of this article.
This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. The original productions by Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix in particular has opened up a new and powerful form of television that has both global income and still unexplored profit potential as convergence between offline and online media continues to blossom. We can help persons needing creative help to turn their ideas for television pilots into actionable, marketable scripts. There's probably nothing more exciting in the field of entertainment than these new vistas online, as that capacity crosses more and more to the big screen. And the opportunities for instantaneous online projections of any type of media in that perennially popular venue. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form. Patriots Act is a Brent Marks legal thriller written by Kenneth Eade, a novelist and attorney, often appearing on Threshold Radio. It's about Ahmed, a naturalized U.S. citizen formerly of Iraq, who is sent to Guantanamo Bay detention camp with no real knowledge of a crime he has committed. Brent Marks, a California attorney, is originally hired by Ahmed's wife to fight for his release. The novel opens with a convincing mock execution, a mode of torture meant to break down a prisoner in a brutal and traumatic way that foreshadows Ahmed's actual death in the hands of his accusers.
Ahmed felt the butt of the rifle strike his spine as his knees buckled and he hit the floor.
Move faster, Haji. Up against the wall. Stop there. Good. Listen up. My name is Sergeant Brown. You're here because you refused to cooperate in the interrogations. The decision has been made to execute you by firing squad.
Wait, I'm an American citizen.
Ahmed felt the black bag rip from his head and for the first time faced his aggressors. He found himself facing a man in camouflage fatigues, holding an M16 to his chest. Beside him, an 8-man firing squad with their rifles in ready position.
I have the right to talk to an attorney. This is all a big mistake.
Brown fastened a leather strap around Ahmed's waist, pinning his spine to a wooden post.
Yeah, a big mistake. You should have cooperated when we asked you about your superiors in Al-Qaeda.
I don't know anyone in Al-Qaeda.
Do you have any last statement, Haji?
But
I repeat, do you have any last statement?
I'm not a terrorist. I'm an American citizen. I've a right to a lawyer and a trial. You've denied me these rights. You will answer to God for your crimes.
I think you can see who has all the rights here. Ready? Aim!
The 8 pointed their rifles at Ahmed. Shivering uncontrollably, Ahmed's knees gave way, and he hung on the post like a man crucified.
Fire!
The deafening explosion of the 8 rifles was the last thing Ahmed heard. He felt the bullets hit his flesh and his body crumpled forward, hanging lifelessly from the post like a scarecrow.
Well, we're getting back to this article about nutrition and the sort of education that doctors do not have about nutrition these days. But we're going to go through a few comments that you might have on certain points the article makes. The first one is, well, I personally remember a recent conversation when you mentioned that the cardiovascular conditions were the leading cause of death in the United States. Now, in the 2018 report by the U.S. Burden of Disease collaborators, they don't put it that way. They say that the major cause of that ailment of death is namely poor quality diet. So they could kind of get to the originating cause of that. How do you feel about that?
Well, they don't want to totally commit. You know, it's people have trouble adopting new thinking, you know, old wine and old bottles and all that. So they have to fudge a little bit, and often they'll end up saying, oh, we need further research for this. That's fine. You know, I mean, I think it's just a process. And so I can tell you all health and disease is about nutrition, the environment, and how we think. There's no ifs and buts about it.
But, I mean, it is still really powerful that this report says that the main cause of death in the United States is poor quality diet. And you were talking about how the second cause, besides the cardiovascular conditions, you were talking about how the second cause of death is what happens to patients in hospitals and through doctors' lack of understanding, right?
Right. Uh-huh. True. So, yes, that's why I have high hopes for this article, because each time we see these good docs telling it like it is.
The thing about a program like this is that it has a chance of reaching people outside of physicians. And that article is going to only be read by physicians unless they happen to read your blogs. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
The second point is the absence of nutritional training makes it hard for physicians to catch up with the most recent emphasis on prevention rather than treatment. In other words, they are still encapsulated in this place, which is curing or affecting a so-called cure of a disease with pharmaceuticals or maybe with surgery. So a lot of these physicians are not really, they're not concerned with prevention. Is that correct, in your opinion?
Absolutely. You know, there is a specialty, preventive medicine, and some docs specialize in it. They haven't been trained properly. But we have to, at the same time, realize that we need these docs that are not trained in prevention. You know, you need the hospital at the bottom of the cliff to take care of those who do fall down because they're taking selfies at the top, you know.
I'm sorry. Right. Okay, go ahead.
But so we need them. But you know what? It'd be so much smarter if we put a bunch of people up there, docs, even a barrier, to tell these idiots not to take selfies so close to the edge.
Yeah, you know? I agree. Here's another point. Advertising and perhaps various types of programs and talk shows present contradictory information to viewers, including patients. Without real scientific training in nutrition, physicians cannot really help disentangle this information. I mean, I imagine that there are lots of doctors who don't even give credence to the dangers of having sugar.
Oh, absolutely. You know, in fact, I used to talk a lot about this, and I wrote a book, Licking Sweet Death.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And this is, but I remember, I mean, it's gotten better, but I remember this ad, an orthopedic doctor saying, showing himself holding a pie, I think it was a pie, saying, come for a consultation and you'll get a free pie. You know, I mean, how excited is that?
Well, it's, you know, it's like watching TV. You know, you watch TV and especially internet things, and you'll see, like YouTube, you'll see very radical attention to, say, superfoods or something,
Right.
Or, you know, the ketosis and so forth, and things like that, some of which are right. maybe valuable and some. And then the most outrageous, you know, food things that you can eat that are definitely poison. And then programs pro and con say, you know, any of the 1,000 different things involved in nutrition. So it's really hard to, so a doctor needs to really be trained.
Absolutely. And it's all that misinformation is fueled by money, by advertising, marketing. And then there's a whole lot of old myths that are really hard to dispel, like soy will kill you, like you need to stop eating certain foods like nightshades and grains with phytates. I mean, it's just a staggering amount of misinformation, and a whole lot of these poor docs don't know what to tell patients. So, that's a big statement there, that docs need better information, as do patients.
Well, you know, one thing about selling things is that you have a good shot at something if you have a unique selling proposition. In other words, so you have a lot of these nutritional things saying, this doctor found out this, and it completely contradicts what everyone else thought about, say, the cure for diabetes is a common one. And so you have a lot of different choices, and you don't know really anything as a consumer. You just are, if you happen to see one and you've never seen anyone else, you might plop down some dollars, but there isn't any real safety there unless you really know something.
Exactly.
Well, we've mentioned in other programs some of the problems that physicians have with depression and even suicide. But there are other problems with their health. And let's say happiness, that is probably the result of the absence of best self-care practices among physicians and residents. In other words, physicians aren't taking care of themselves physically and emotionally as well as getting depressed. Is that true?
This is a huge problem. The estimates of depressed doctors, burnt out doctors vary, but the last article I saw was about 40%. And of course, a whole lot of them are overworked and they have not realized that they could work the way they want to instead of the way some corporate bean counter is telling them to practice. So they've given up control of how they practice. For the most part, but there's a movement. A lot of doctors are quitting the system. I'm one of them. So yeah. I no longer take insurance because whoever signs a check tells you what to do. And so I think it's a bit of greediness. You know, if doctors realize that they would be happier if they made half of the money and regain control, I think a lot of them would do it. It's just that they're just like hamsters on a treadmill, hard to get off.
And also the fact that they have to do all this paperwork distracts them from what their calling is.
Yes, I would like to refer people to my last blog, To Err is Inhumane. Of course, Err is spelled H-E-R, which is Electronic Health Records. So I copied a good doctor writing about that, but and I often do that, as I will with Dr. Willett's article as well. I just want people to see the evidence that I'm not the only one out there. One of the main reasons why I quit the system is the medical records. I was spending most of my time typing. I couldn't even look at the patient because I was typing away. And patients don't like it. Doctors don't like it. The only people who like it is the bean counters. And so that's a good blog to read. To Err is Inhumane.
I like that. Yeah, Err. Well, in our programs, we've mentioned the dramatic lack of training by physicians. This article asserts that the average time devoted to nutrition in medical school is 19 hours over 4 years, with an emphasis on biochemistry and vitamin deficiencies. Following medical school, specialized nutrition training for specialists is minimal or almost virtually absent. It cites the current Accreditation Council for Graduate Medical Education requirements for internal medicine as 42 pages, and one document on cardiovascular disease as 41 pages, and both lack the words nutrition and diet. That's the requirements for going into a specialty.
You know, I'm glad you laugh, because what are we going to do, cry? I mean, it's just ridiculous. In good circles of nutrition, doctors are derided and looked down. In fact, I was just at a meeting of naturopaths and chiropractors, and you think, you know, they'd be glad I was there, but they were not. They could not help but look down on me because they thought that I didn't know anything about nutrition, and I wasn't about to dissuade them or disabuse them of their opinion. I know who I am. The point is they cannot understand that a whole lot of doctors will train themselves in education, as I have done. Yeah. In fact, I've written 5 books about it, so I just had to laugh.
Well, remember, we had been talking about the 2018 Burden of Disease Collaborators report, which said that poor diet was the leading reason for death in the United States. And I guess these people didn't really read it. But that fact is matched with a 2017 survey of 646 cardiologists, with 90% reporting they did not know enough about nutrition to counsel their patients, with 95% believing it was their personal responsibility to do so. Now, that is really poor, isn't it? I mean, that is just an outstanding statistic, right?
Oh, yeah. And let me read you this article that just came out. It's just staggering. I'm looking for it. Give me just 1 second. I wanted to share it because it was written about cardiology. And here it is. At the title of the article is a bit misleading. The red and the white and the difference it makes in the European Heart Journal. Well, the difference between red and white meat and how bad red meat is. And the reason it is because most people lack the bacteria in the intestines, and you've heard me talk about this,
sure,
that will properly handle red meat. And so we end up with T-MAO or T-trimethyl amino oxide, which is very toxic. This is a postbiotic that we've talked about. Anything we put in our mouth is translated or assimilated or processed, if you will, by the gut bacteria. And so when we eat red meat, we don't have the right bacteria to process that red meat. So we put out T-MAO, which is very inflammatory. It goes straight to your blood vessels and your heart, and then you get heart disease. In other words, the way to a man's heart is the food we eat. How about that?
Well, that's very interesting. Yeah. Well, we're about ready to take another break now, and we're going to dive into the question of social media and how it affects our teenage populations, and we'll be right back.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
If you're not fond of books, you may be interested in watching Dr. Rodier's slide presentation on his website, hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. It lasts 48 minutes and explains the simple roots of all diseases with pictures and graphs that are easy to understand. The presentation includes basic principles of physics, philosophy, anthropology, and history to truly integrate the most vital pillars of human health.
Now let's hear a great little light storm song about parental love and its sometimes sad deficiency. It's called Give Me Your Love.
I was born with money and gold and toys. Never had to beg or borrow. You've run my life.
But now it's time to face the truth and not the lie that's any. I'm disillusioned, I'm discontent. Father, understand me. Give me your love, not your money. Give me your love, not your money. Give me your love, not your money. Give me your love. Give me your love, 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 not your, not your money. Time to hear me, or will you leave another 50 bills with a note that says you're busy? Well, if that's your life, then you count me out. Stop the world, I'm getting dizzy. Give me your love, not your money.
We're back on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show with Dr. Hugo Rodier, and we've been talking about an article discussing the deficiency of doctors in understanding nutrition, and I think you had some comments you wanted to make before we get into our next topic.
Yes, I like to quote from the last paragraph in that article, okay?
Sure.
An emphasis on nutrition is not only good medicine, but it's also becoming sound economics as new value-based models for payment of medical services take hold. Financial incentives in medicine will increasingly align with prevention-oriented services, and among them should be a greater focus on nutrition, quote-unquote. What a wonderful bottom line. At the beginning, we talked about a more philosophical approach, integrative hermetic approach. But at the end, here's the other extreme, and they're both good. It's good money. It's good economic sense to do all this. So here you got the male and the female in balance.
It's good economic sense for the country as a whole, but not good economic sense for, say, certain pharmaceutical doctors, pharmaceutical companies and certain doctors.
Exactly.
And the various politicians that are supported by these practices.
And that's a problem. That's a problem. You know, we talked about big food before. Remember, we talked about food. Yeah, those are the ones who will suffer.
Well, so going to our next topic, last month CBS commented on a report published in the Journal of Abnormal Psychology, a publication of the American Psychological Association. Let's listen to an audio of the CBS story, which is entitled Link Found Between Teens on Social Media and Mental Illness.
I probably check it every 15 minutes, like 10 minutes even.
17-year-old Ruby Fair is talking about her phone.
FOMO, fear of missing out, is like such a thing.
Well, if you don't have social media, you're not cool, or let's say you don't have enough friends or you're not popular.
Teenagers tell me they're not surprised. Research published by the American Psychological Association found possible links between social media and skyrocketing rates of mental health issues among young people, including anxiety, major depression, and suicidal thoughts. Between 2005 and 2017, kids ages 12 to 17 had a 52% increase of symptoms of depressive episodes, and young people from 18 to 25 saw a 71% increase of symptoms of psychological distress.
Researchers found the greatest spike in symptoms in 2011, about the same time social media really took hold.
They want to be famous. They want to be Instagram famous, Snapchat famous, Facebook famous.
Psychologist Dr. Jeffrey Gardier says these days young people are measuring their success through the unrealistic lens of social media. Dr. Gardier says parents can look for red flags that there's an issue.
It interferes with their completing their homework, where they're too tired to be more productive in the classroom. And of course, that social isolation of they'd rather spend more time with the devices than with other kids.
Experts say if there is a problem, parents need to limit their kids' screen time and encourage more social activities. Cindy Hsu, CBS 2 News.
Seems kind of sinister, but not too much of a surprise. Let me just read a little bit more, Doctor, from the article, the summary of the actual report, which was called Age, Period, and Cohort Trends in Mood Disorder Indicators and Suicide-Related Outcomes in a Nationally Representative Database from 2005-2017. Let me point out that a cohort, where they're talking about cohorts in this little summary, they're talking about a group of people, not... So a cohort itself is a group in this kind of jargon. So you have a nationally representative survey of U.S. adolescents and adults where they assess age, period, and cohort trends in mood disorders and suicide-related outcomes since the mid-2000s. And listen to this amazing statistics again. Rates of major depressive episodes in the last year increased 52% from 2005 to 2017, from 8.7% to 13.2% among adolescents 12 to 17, and 63% from 2009-2017, from 8.1% to 13.2% among young adults 18 to 25. Serious psychological distress in the last month and suicide-related outcomes, like suicidal ideation, plans, attempts, and deaths by suicide in the last year also increased among young adults 18 to 25 from 2008 to 2017, with a 71% increase in various psychological distresses, with less consistent and weaker increases among adults 25 and older. So they are attributing this primarily to trends related to effects of age, period, and birth, and cohorts among adults. So the cohort is really important here. And there's a steady rise in mood disorder and suicide-related outcomes between cohorts born from the early 1980s, millennials, to the late 1990s. Isn't that startling?
It's just shocking. More so when other reports are saying that our love for technology, only 60% of people are really into it. And then, so you'd think that an appreciation of social media would be as high, but it's not. Only 1 out of 4 people like Twitter, and only 1/3 of people like Facebook. Yet, 70% of them use them, even though 80% of people think it's a waste of time. So a very schizophrenic approach. And the only way to explain it is addiction. People are addicted. So even though they know it's a waste of time, even though they don't quite approve, they still use it. And so it's a new drug. If we think of it as drug, as sugar, as alcohol, as tobacco, then we see that a whole lot of these poor people are trapped and they need help.
Well, what strikes me about this is that a very commercial vehicle like Facebook, which I believe is probably the main driver of teenage social media, has been able to hold our young people hostage to what appears to be a kind of socially competitive game for cohort recognition and a major distraction from culturally positive and meaningful activities, including their education. You know, they're like in the article and the report by CBS, their homework is taking like a second place or a third place. Because they found a way that they need to integrate with people, but they're doing it for competitive reasons. And I think their social consciousness, and that includes their political consciousness, even as teenagers, is very possibly affected by this.
Yes. You know, the way I look at it is that any new technology will be overused when it first comes out. So I'm hoping that the pendulum will swing to the middle. I mean, we all like the internet and our cell phones, and we might use Twitter or Facebook for this and that judiciously. There's nothing wrong with these technologies as the way they're being used. But a great example of this is when X-rays first came out. I think you were around at those days, weren't you? Like,
No. Well, when I was 7 or 8 years old, I think there were X-rays. I'm not 200 years old. I mean,
okay, when they first came out, X-rays, people started to use them in stores. If you wanted to buy a hat, they would X-ray your head. If you wanted to buy gloves, they would X-ray your hands. If you wanted to buy shoes, they would X-ray your feet. So I think that's what's happening right now. So soon, well, I don't know, maybe it'll take a generation or two, but cell phones and the internet and Facebook will kind of swing back to a more rational usage. I mean, we don't want to avoid law them or restrict them in any way. Well, I guess we might want to restrict them a little.
Well, what's happening is that, for one thing, the lack of responsibility on Facebook and stealing taking millions and millions of people's profiles, including their emails, and putting them out there is not helping anybody. It's kind of goes along with the lack of privacy that we have. But I do believe that actually people are probably more concerned about that than they are about the extreme aggressive moves against personal privacy by massive surveillance. So in a way, it's another way of distracting them from reality, but now showing how corrupt these, and you know, not only that, of course, being a vehicle for all kinds of extremist and false propaganda that Facebook is using.
So yeah,
you're dealing with corrupt media on every level here.
Yeah. Well, we know that the index of ADD, hyperactivity, goes up the more you use the internet. We know that happiness drops the more you use Facebook and cell phones. The more social isolation goes up, the more the stress goes up. And I'm scrolling down a bunch of articles I have on this. So it's not like we don't have any evidence. Narcissism is higher in people who use Facebook, but that's no surprise. Why would you want to tell the whole world that you wash your socks yesterday or put a picture of what you're eating at the very moment? I mean, I don't care.
Well, I have some really nice socks, though, and I do a great job when I wash them. I don't know why I shouldn't tell the world.
Yeah.
But, I mean, really, it's just the whole of our lives now in the United States, and certainly in other countries, is meant to be a distraction, I think, because as things move along, I mean, I'm thinking of what happened with Julian Assange the other day. And I mean, that is, for the people on alternative media like myself, this is one of the biggest, most important things that have happened since they're challenging our right to the freedom of the press and protection of whistleblowers and all this. But meanwhile, I think a lot of people are going to not even know that it happened. And they'll be on social media, which is filled with this stuff, but they'll be in their own little circles, you know, tagging their friends and telling them about washing their socks.
Yes. I have an article here that it's worth quoting from the New York Times Magazine, clear back in 2009. The article is Stop Your Search Engines. And the good writer says that this is much like Ulysses being tempted by the sirens. It, pretty much a temptation of get unending knowledge. But then Ulysses went mad. In other words, we have a lot of surfing, very little diving into really concrete and meaty subjects. In fact, the article says, the perpetual pursuit of little thoughts, the net result may be only to prevent us from finding the big thoughts, end quote.
Yeah, that's really profound. And I think, unfortunately, true. I watch a lot of alternative media for my job, you know. And what I'm finding now is that a lot of people who are in alternative media, and even in major media, don't really know the facts very well. They're constantly misquoting facts or taking some things that are sort of outdated information. And I see the same with any, you know, a lot of the government pronouncements are just, there's a lot of unreality there. So I think that what we're talking about is a continual dance of things that are not important to mask what really is important. And one of those things is the thing you mentioned in the beginning, is our relationship with nature and with God. And all that is being sort of pushed under the table with all this distraction.
Yes, it's so sad how it's breaking family and social bonds. You see entire families eating out, even at home, on their cell phones, you know, texting other people. It has to change, you know, and I'm glad to see these articles come out because there's a backlash. In fact, entire countries are beginning to start campaigns for awareness. France, of course, always being the leader in this type of thing. And it's not that France doesn't like technology. They're pretty good at it. It's just that they have a more of a Renaissance humanistic approach to life, as you know, the la joie de vivre. So I listen to the French news, and there are articles and commentaries about this almost on a daily basis. So you see these little towns forsaking the internet, or, I mean, that might be extreme at this point, but you get the gist, you know, there's a considerable backlash.
Yeah. I remember, I still read a lot of books, but I know that a lot of people around me, they don't. They don't read books anymore, you know, so, and they're not diving deep into very much of anything. And it's so easily, they're so easily programmed by, they become puppets of the programmers on the internet who have their own particular motives.
Does the name Jean-Luc Picard ring a bell?
What is the, I spelled the last name?
Picard.
It does, but I can't think
well,
of
that's
it.
My favorite Star Trek captain.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Patrick Stewart. And yeah. I just love the way he was portrayed. You know, as a Frenchman, he was always reading books, and he was playing the flute, and he was very humanistic despite all the technology around him. And it's not that he rejected technology, but a couple of episodes, they show him going back to France to his father's vineyard. And they were so touching, especially to me, because Picard didn't want to remain in the vineyard. He wanted to join the Starfleet Academy and see space. And so there was a bad relationship between the two. But Picard was able to balance both sides, you know, the Mother Nature and technology, the male and the female. And so these are great little pithy programming to drive the point home in an entertaining way. We need both. We need technology. We need the internet, et cetera. It's being overused right now, in my opinion.
Well, I guess this is probably the end of our conversation today, but I think this was very, very interesting. And I hope that as people begin to look at our programs, including our archive programs, they'll see that there's a possibility for a new way of looking at their health and new sources of help.
Well, thank you. Thank you for discussing all this, Johnny.
So we'll see you next week. You take
all
care.
Right.
Bye-bye.
We'll say goodbye now and end with an extraordinary version of Unchained Melody performed by Patricia Welch.
For more information about Dr. Rodier's practice, books, blogs, and newsletters, contact Hugo Rodier, MD, at www.hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com.
Wait for me, wait for me.